Online Podcast 164.
Hello.
I am back. I'm back. And the sky is still blue. Langit biru kita. In Malay, it means our blue sky. It's a song that I co-wrote with a Japanese guy. Several guys, because they are a band, but I was in touch with this guy named Hiro, which I'm planning on having him on the show just to talk about the song. I don't mean to, like, you know, go into talking about the theme song, but the reason why I did that was because I want to give a little bit of a basic information for all of you. I'm going to move my microphone so you may hear the squeak. Oh, now that I can lay back and talk to you. So I would not waste too much time. Well, not waste, but I wouldn't go into too much of my personal crap right now, because I will be playing, as promised, the first part of Bishop Gumbleton's talk here in Kansas City. And I will be... Test. I know, I'm sorry, I should be doing this on the air, but I am. I shouldn't be doing this right now, but I am doing it, so get over it. And I can hear there's no wing, 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 and that bugs me. But anyway, I'm wasting time, so I will be playing the talk by Bishop Gumbleton momentarily. But I would like to let you know that I am, if you're listening to this because I met you at Bishop Gumbleton's talk, welcome. And also would like to let you know that I will be posting Bishop Gumbleton's talk in its entirety on the on my website, so that you can download it and share it with other people. You can either burn a CD or put it on your own website. Go ahead and put the link from my website too, if you would like, if you don't want to deal with bandwidth. So I'm going to be posting that file up very soon after I post all the shows, all the two shows that I'll be using to post Bishop Gumbleton's talk. After that, I will be making that available on the web somewhere. I will let you know next Thursday, as we are wrapping up the second part of the show. I will let you know where you can obtain those information. So right now, I would like to go straight into it, but I will talk more about this guy named Oliver, who is starting his new podcast in the Philippines, and he sent me an audio comment, a very nice one, and I'll be playing that for you Monday next week. And I will be telling you my crazy week last week on Monday as well. Well, just the beginning of this week, Monday and Tuesday, were crazy. So I'll tell you all about that on Monday. But in the meantime, as promised, let's go into Bishop Gumbleton's talk. Now, you'll hear the introduction first, too, I think. Okay, I'm going to be playing this because I did this, the whole recording in its entirety. I'm going to post that file up on the web, so you'll hear some of my... listen to some of my talk here. Maybe I should skip that ahead and listen to this.
Unitarian Universalist Church.
Okay. For nonviolence and beyond, Bishop Thomas Gumbleton, auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Detroit, his hometown, has lived that prophetic reality for decades. He's been a persistent and thoughtful advocate for nonviolence, a founding president of Pax Christi USA, the Catholic Peace Organization. And his passion for justice has taken him to places like pre-war Iraq, to Haiti amid overwhelming poverty and chaos, and throughout Latin America. He has prodded the church to speak out on the difficult issues of war, of modern weapons, and military spending. In recent years, he has been the lone voice in the hierarchy urging a greater understanding of and more generous welcome for homosexuals in the church. For many, he has become a symbol of hope, not of cheap grace and evasion of rules, but a hope born of prayer and deep and thoughtful consideration of challenging issues. We are fortunate, I think, that he has taken time to be with us today. Join me in welcoming Bishop Thomas Gumbleton.
Thank you very much. I am always intimidated when I get a standing ovation at the beginning of a talk. Puts a lot of pressure. You better do well, because the expectation is high. But anyway, it feels good to be so well received, and I thank you very much for that. I'm grateful to Tom Roberts and his committee that invited me here today, and Carolyn for her words of welcome to all of us. I knew I was not in a Catholic church when I walked in, and I saw everybody down in front.
So, I'll be breaking in and out of this too, just, you know, to give my perspective of the talk. So, why is it so soft now? I'm sorry. Here you go.
Yeah, I don't know how the Unitarian Universalist Church does it, but that's quite interesting that people come right to the front. Catholic churches, everybody's in the back. But I feel very comfortable here, though, because there's a Unitarian Universalist Church very close to my parish in Detroit, and we have numbers of programs there also, and it's a very progressive, dynamic community, and I sense that this church is the same, so it feels good to be here.
Before I finish the whole thing, I forgot to tell you that if you just happen to be downloading this show and listening to the show for the first time, I this is a talk by Bishop Gumbleton on the specific topic on homosexuality and the Catholic Church. And it is one of the first, I think, or one of the very, very few that's out there publicly talking about we should have full acceptance of homosexuals in our church, the Catholic Church. This is coming from a bishop, and again, I mentioned it last week that he is, or not last week, on Monday, he's 70-something years old. So this has nothing to do with age. This has nothing to do with how much he follows the Bible and all that. It's just a matter of whether or not you listen to your heart and whether or not you be truly accepting and truly loving as the religion, as the church teaches you. So that's what we're going to be listening to. And I think it's a great, great, powerful speech for parents with gay children, as well as gay people who themselves are struggling through their faith, their spirituality, their religious life, at the same time as facing their own sexuality. So listen to this.
I am very happy to talk about the topic that we are going to discuss today, the pastoral letter of the Catholic bishops of the United States, Always Our Children. It's a pastoral letter that was greatly needed in our church and continues to be needed. And I thought that I might begin by talking about how important this letter is for people in the Catholic community and, of course, beyond the Catholic community and our civil community, where we also need to develop much better understanding of the whole gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community and a more welcoming spirit for them. Just recently, the Vatican, as you know, published another document that has to do with gay men in this case and the possibility of their being accepted into Catholic seminaries. A parishioner of mine, in fact, at St. Leo's in Detroit, wrote this open letter to the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. She says, "As a mother, I would like you to know how much it hurts to hear the child you raised and love referred to once again as objectively disordered by the Church. I cannot imagine the pain and despair it causes all the upright gay priests who have served the Church so steadfastly and who continue to do so. The above-mentioned document states that it was made more urgent by the current situation to ban those with deep-seated homosexual tendencies from entering into holy orders. The only reasonable conclusion from this wording would be that homosexual persons were solely responsible for the recent scandal within our beloved Church. Not only is this not true, it is spiritually harmful to those of us who know and love homosexual people, and it is an affront to all the girls and women who were abused. As a parent of a lesbian, I know my child to be a kind, loving, devout person who lives her life in full accordance with the gospel of Jesus, as do many homosexual persons. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states, and she quotes, they do not choose their homosexuality. And as a parent, I can attest to that very statement. My daughter, who received 16 years of Catholic education, struggled and prayed for many years, asking God to take this challenge away. When we learned of our daughter's orientation, we were devastated. We too prayed endlessly for God to change things. We said novenas, rosaries, and stormed all the saints in heaven to help us. God answered our prayers and did change things, but in a way we did not expect. During our time of praying, reading, and getting to know gay and lesbian persons, we became aware that they are indeed a gift from God, a gift that reflects God's love in a new and powerful way. In addition, I now have a small insight into the agony that the mother of Jesus suffered when her son was condemned and then crucified. Part of her anguish must have come from those in the early church who abandoned Jesus and did not speak up or help him. There are still large numbers of people in the Catholic Church and even beyond the Catholic Church who feel the terrible pain of the exclusion and the discrimination that is perpetrated against gay and lesbian people. And if you don't mind, I would share something of my own personal experience. As some of you probably know, my brother is a gay man. He struggled against it for years because he had been taught it was wrong. And he heard all those phrases about homosexual people being an abomination. He was called names and so on, I'm sure. And so he tried to not be gay. In fact, he married 4 children. And so it wasn't until his middle age, in fact, that he finally came to terms with who he really is. And his marriage broke up, although in an amazing way, he and his wife are still on good terms, and their 4 children still relate to each of them in a loving way. But when he decided to come out, he wrote a letter to his siblings. There were 9 of us in the family and to my mother, who was still living, explaining his coming out. My own reaction to it was not very good. I was angry. And I resented the fact that he had decided to come out. Much like many people in our society. In fact, I, for a while, refused even to read the letter. I knew what was in it because one of my brothers or sisters had told me, you know, asked me, did you get Dan's letter? And so I knew what was in it, but I was so angry I refused to read it and was not very helpful to him at first. And when I look back, I'm very embarrassed and humbled, humiliated, because one of my main reasons for being angry was it might affect me. You know, here I am, a Catholic bishop, public person in the church, and I have a brother who is publicly announcing he's gay. Well, of course, that's a very selfish and very wrong reaction, but it was my first reaction. Well, gradually I came to terms with it, and I began to really explore about homosexuality, which I had not done before. I had not been prepared for this. Our seminary training was very inadequate when it came to the whole question of homosexuality. And so I did reconcile with my brother, and he's fully accepted in our family and so on. But one thing I never did was talk to my mother about it. And I didn't realize how deeply upset she was. Not because even for a moment would she have rejected him. That was out of the question. But I found out one evening when I was visiting my mother's home, and as I was about to leave, she followed me to the door, and it was obvious she wanted to talk about something. She was troubled. So we stood there and talked for a few moments, and then she asked me a question. Is Dan going to hell? This was on her mind. It was weighing on her. Is Dan going to hell? She had heard all those messages about gay people. She knew that the church condemned them. She knew that supposedly they were horrendous sinners. And her one concern as she was looking ahead to her own passing, because she was at that point in her middle 80s, she wanted to be sure somehow that Dan was okay. Well, I'm very grateful that I had taken the time to come to terms with who he is and to fully accept him and to love him as a brother. And so I was able to say to her, no, Dan's not going to hell. Don't worry. God made Dan the gay person that he is. God loves Dan. But one of the things that that did for me was make me very aware of how much we needed in our church to reach out to the families of gay and lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual people. We had made no effort really to give them any guidance, as we had failed to give guidance to homosexual people as they were growing up. They grew up without anything, having to struggle with this issue all on their own. Our church community provided no guidance, no help, no support.
So I'm going to jump in again. That is so true. I'm preaching to the choir, but for those of you who may not be, who are not gay or who are not Catholic, you know, if you just put yourself in our shoes that there's no help at all from the church. Plus, we were being fed the idea that you are a sin. You know, you are wrong. You have that thing in you that is evil. So that is so true. You know, we've never been provided any sort of guideline. Not even to say, we don't even talk about it. That's pretty much the end of the story. So that is very true. And I hope that you're still listening, even if you're not Catholic, and if you are not interested at all. I mean, you can skip. I mean, I don't really mind. But if I just think that it's very powerful, and it's not only powerful because it is, it's not powerful only if you are Catholic, but it's also powerful just to see how somebody truly can be loving in this situation and still be able to be religious. So listen to this, continue listening to this.
And so in fact, the one thing I did do that perhaps has been somewhat helpful was to contact the committee of the Catholic bishops on marriage and family life. And the chair of the committee at that time was Cardinal Joseph Bernardine. And I asked him, I said, we have to do something for the homosexual community and for their families. And should we not write some kind of a pastoral statement to give them guidance, give them help, give them support, try to make the church a more welcoming community for them? He quickly agreed. However, when I wrote to him, it was the spring of the year, and he was at the end of his term as the chair of that particular committee. And he said, I really can't do anything about it now, but I'll pass your request on to the committee and to the next chair and ask them to prepare something. Well, he did it. He passed it on, and then in a couple of years, we did publish, the Catholic Bishop of the United States, this document called Always Our Children. And it certainly is a step in the right direction. It's helpful in many ways. Although, in one part of it, we say to Catholic parents, you must love your children and you must accept them and so on. We were trying to be very helpful. Well, a number of parents said to me, you don't have to tell me to love my children. Why does a bishop have to tell me? I love my children, and, no matter what you say or say about them. And that's understandable. I can understand why some parents did not think this was such a great document.
Now, that is true for most parents. I can tell for sure that it's true for most parents, but there are also parents who may know that, but reacted not in a very loving way. They may have said things that's hurtful, and I have seen, in fact, I heard on Archer Radio just maybe 2 days ago that when he was talking to Ramble, Tom from Ramble Redhead, Tom was at the cousin's wedding, or not wedding, what is it? Ceremony something? the gay ceremony, commitment ceremony. And he was, found out that the other person's parents are not talking to him anymore. Not Tom, but a friend of theirs. And so that was very hurtful, as you can imagine. And I remember thinking about that myself before we came out to, we meaning me and my brother, before we both came out, we're both gay, and we are the only two sons. So you can imagine the burden that my parents would have, especially coming, not really burden, but the impact that is going to be, the impact on them for being the two male, or two sons in the family, especially in a Chinese family, whom you're always thinking, most people are thinking of, oh, you have to pass the family name down, blah-de-blah. I know that my parents have always been pretty progressive and very loving, and so, but that did come into my head, is what if they don't want to accept me anymore? Does that mean that my parents are going to just disown us? I know realistically, well, knowing my parents, I know that's probably not going to happen, but it did cross my mind. So not every single parent, especially in the Catholic family, would react in a way where they would still be very loving. They may be accepting, but at the same time, which what well, he'll refer to, is they would still have concern and they are confused and Bishop Gumbleton's parents, mom, who was concerned about Dan's, who is Bishop Gumbleton's brother, whether or not he's going to go to hell. So, yeah, not everyone is as lucky. And also during the Q&A session, one of the audience members actually told the bishop that, what do we do? What do we do if my parents are not like your parents, as loving and as open with accepting that they are gay and still being able to accept that they're Catholics?
And by homosexual people, are not necessarily totally thrilled with it. However, I think it's got some positive things in it, and then I this morning hope to suggest where we have to go further.
So another thing that I would like to chime in also is the thing that he was talking about, the pastoral document or whatever you call it, that thing, I've read it, and Always Our Children is what it's called. And I've read it, and yes, like you said, I was underwhelmed by it. But at the same time, it's a very powerful document, especially coming from the church, who's always said nothing about it besides calling us, evil. And so despite the pat on the back and then a but in that article, because it would say, you know, we have to accept gay people, blah, blah, blah. And then it would say, except you cannot act on the homosexual act, because the act itself is still a sin. So you are not a sin now, but the action, meaning sex itself, is a sin, which is silly, dumb, and he's going to talk about that too.
And to where the whole church and the whole, beyond the Christian church, the religious community and the civil community, we really have to go much further in becoming fully accepting.
So you heard that, fully accepting, not partially, not almost accepting, but fully. This is what set Bishop Gumbleton from any other bishops or priests, if they even follow the Always Our Children a tiny bit. And looking at the action of the bishop here in town, our new bishop in the Kansas City St. Joseph Diocese, he is definitely not practicing what that article is saying, because he is just, he's a total mess
of this whole community. But one of the things that was a major advance, and although it might not seem so, it seems obvious in a way why it would be such a major step, but it was, where in the document, we, for the first time in a Catholic teaching document, accept homosexuality as an orientation, that it's not something chosen. And this is new. If you look through Catholic moral textbooks, the way I was taught in the seminary about homosexuality, it was talked about only as homosexual acts that were freely chosen. And there is nothing about the fact that this person has a whole different orientation. And that's a very significant understanding, to know that there is an orientation that a person does not choose, but receives. And so in this document, we do say this: the meaning and implications of the term homosexual orientation are not universally agreed upon, but church teaching acknowledges a distinction between a homosexual tendency, which proves to be transitory, and homosexuals who are definitively such because of some kind of innate instinct. And that's a quote, actually, from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And in the light of this, therefore, it seems appropriate to understand homosexuality or homosexual orientation, heterosexual or homosexual, as a deep-seated dimension of one's personality, and to recognize its relative stability in a person. And so that gives a whole different sense to this question, or to and who the homosexual people are, that is not something chosen. And as a result of that, we also say then, the next conclusion to this, is that this implies or shows us that we must respect a person's freedom to refuse therapy directed toward changing a homosexual orientation, Given the present state of medical and psychological knowledge, there is no guarantee that such therapy will succeed. Thus, there can be no obligation to undertake it. Now, that's a further step forward, because there are those in the church who claim that you make a choice and you can undo that choice. You can do what they call reparative therapy.
Okay, now this is the interesting part. This is the part where one guy actually came up at the end of the talk and came up during the Q&A and said that he was one of the success story of those therapy and he left homosexuality. I still feel like that, but I'm consciously telling myself not to judge, because he may not be, I just don't know. In his situation, he may just be in deep denial, or he was just maybe going through a phase or whatever. I'm not sure. It's just that it's very interesting. So we may actually go into Q&A in the future, but I just want to let you know about that. But I also think that, of course, to a gay person, it's absurd that you want to treat me. It's like, oh, you're black, so I want to treat you so that you become white, like Michael Jackson, like treat your skin. So that is an insult, and that is absurd. So that's why he's saying that it's a big step, but to most of us gay people, we just think that that's dumb. And that's why I'm saying stuff that comes out from the church that is a big step to the church may not be to us. I also feel like when we were at the talk, I also feel like the talk is more geared toward people who wants information, which is some people there. I saw many parents, and they feel very good about what was said, but for those of us who are already there, meaning we have already heard those words, or we have walked through those paths to get to the stage where we are comfortable with our religion and our sexuality, that we are fully Catholic and fully gay, it doesn't mean much. Plus, everybody who were there, most people who were there, were not those who needed to listen or hear this message. And that's why I think that this recording, not this one, but the one that I'll be putting out at next week, is very crucial, which is the talk in its all in its entirety. It's so crucial. Everybody need to spread that out and let people listen to it, because not everyone would have this opportunity to listen to a bishop talk like this, based on faith, based on Catholics' teachings, and based on love, like true love, not a conditional love. So listen to this, continue.
I've talked to, and I'm sure many of you are aware of this, people who have tried reparative therapy. It doesn't work. In fact, very often, it makes the whole situation worse.
Except for that one guy at the end.
As is
understandable
when, if you think about it, a person already has this feeling, there's something wrong with me. Now, I'm an abomination. I'm going to hell. God can't love me.
That's exactly how I felt growing up. And you pray for change. Pray for change unsuccessfully. And you keep praying and you keep praying until the day that, oh my gosh, I just have to change my idea, not myself, but the idea that I am actually fine. And that was the day. That was the day that I accepted my homosexuality and actually become more Christian.
And so now I go into therapy that's supposed to change all of that. I come out of the therapy and I'm still the same person I was before I started. So that makes me an even worse sinner. I should be able to change, but I don't. It does great harm to homosexual people to force them to try to do so-called reparative therapy. Now, in some cases, I'm sure if there is such a thing as transitory orientation, and a person might move, even in normal growth patterns, people move sometimes from one orientation toward another until their sexuality is deeply embedded in who they are as a person. But a real homosexual person has no obligation, and in fact, I believe we should discourage such people from trying to do so-called reparative therapy. And this document backs that up. And that's a move in the right direction also. Now, further things that happen in that are spoken about in the document that make it a major step forward in Catholic understanding about homosexuality is that we do insist that all in all, it is essential to recall one basic truth. God loves every person as a unique individual. Sexual identity helps to define the unique persons we are, and one component of our sexual identity is sexual orientation. Thus, our total personhood is more encompassing than sexual orientation. Human beings see the appearance, but God looks into the heart. It's a quote from 1 Samuel. They are beloved of God as they are. Homosexual people are beloved of God as they are. And this is a very important, positive, strong statement. So that people who are gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual, who have grown up with the idea there's something wrong with me, I'm disordered, I'm evil, God can't love me, to be assured, no, as you are, God loves you.
Did you hear that? If you are that person, did you hear that? It is very, go ahead and rewind it and replay that. God accepts you as you are. Don't listen to those people who tell you otherwise. That is what... Logically, don't you think God should be that way? I mean, which God would say that, I love you, except you need to be this, this, and that? No. If God is love, love is just love. Not any... like a sale with the disclaimer on the at the end of the thing with the half-page disclaimer that, oh, except that if you're gay, if you're blah, 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 blah.
You're made in the image of God, as every one of us is. And God loves you as you are. And then because of that, we insist that there are rights that homosexual people have and that we must... insist upon within the church. And this section of the document, respect for the God-given dignity of all persons means the recognition of human rights of all persons, including this whole community. The teachings of the church make it clear that the fundamental human rights of homosexual persons must be defended, that all of us must strive to eliminate any forms of injustice, oppression, or violence against them. That's a very positive statement. And it's not sufficient only to avoid unjust discrimination. Homosexual persons must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. In other words, every one of our churches has to be what people now sometimes call gay-friendly. We have to be welcoming. We have to be fully inclusive. And there's a way you communicate that spirit. I've been in churches that are very inclusive, very friendly, very welcoming, and you sense it immediately. You can also be in a church where you sense the opposite. And homosexual people often, if they come to church, feel that very strongly.
That's true, and that's why I go to my church that I go to, Guardian Angels, on Westport Road here in Kansas City, because you can feel it. The scary thing, the reason that made me cry actually in church when I was talking to another friend of mine, when I heard Bishop, our Bishop, the new Bishop, which is Bishop Finn, I don't think I've ever mentioned his name, Bishop Robert Finn. He is the one that is making it scary, because since he took office, a lot of gay people got fired. Well, one that I know of. You know, he changes a lot of stuff, and not just gay people. I mean, women and also lay persons serving the church. He changed a lot of stuff. So Bishop Finn, Bishop Robert Finn, is the one that I'm talking about. And he, I don't believe, practiced what Bishop Gumbleton just said.
That's wrong.
Exactly, that's wrong.
And to go a bit further in that, as the church becomes more inclusive and fully accepting, the bishops point out that homosexuals should have an active role in the Christian community.
Uh-huh. And did you guys read the article that I put on my last show where the, well, this is not directly the bishop, but the parishioners actually petitioned to have their music director fired because he is also the gay men's chorus director. So, no, yeah, you cannot participate anymore. If the church wants, if the people says no, and you know, if the bishop believes otherwise, that wouldn't have happened.
What does this mean in practice? It means that all homosexual persons have a right to be welcomed into the community, to hear the word of God, and to receive pastoral care.
Except if you have sex. I mean, if you can swear and pledge, you know, what you call that? No sex, whatever it's called. I'm sure you're like screaming and yelling. So yeah, except that you said that you're not going to have sex and or not practice, or, you know, not going to have sex, and then you can actually serve the church.
Homosexual persons.
That's if Bishop Finn allows you to.
You should have opportunities to lead and serve the community. The church recognize would instruct us to make sure that homosexual people have a visible public
celibacy. Sorry, I just thought of that.
role in the community. That means that homosexual people should be welcomed onto a parish council. They should be allowed to be extraordinary ministers of the Eucharist. They should be allowed to be lectors. They should have a full role in the community. This, too, is, I think, a major step forward.
It's like, you can live. I give you the permission to live, except you cannot breathe. If we're talking about, you know, you if you're gay, if you want to participate in the church, you cannot have sex, because we accept you for this much, but except for that little tiny part, which means you cannot breathe. You know, you can do what you want, you can eat what you want, you can drink what you want, you can enjoy yourself in this house, except you cannot breathe. That is just stupid. Oh, I lost my place here.
And that's where, I mean, all of I've said so far is where we clearly have made an advance in our understanding of the homosexual community and our acceptance of the community.
So I'm going to stop now because, you know, it's, you know, almost past, it's almost 45 minutes. Oh, goodness. So because I talked too much, I'm sorry. But, you know, I may have to make it into three pieces now because I still have about 40 minutes to go and I only played about 25 minutes of the talk. So what I'll do is it may take, part of my Thursday. I won't be talking about this on Monday, but on Thursday I'll continue and we'll see how far we would go. And I want to thank all of you who actually are listening to this, and also especially to Mo for letting or arranging it for me to be able to record the show and share it to people. I would definitely have my parents listen to this. I would definitely have anybody that I know of listen to this, and I also would be talking to several people that I met there at the meet at the talk, and I'm going to have gay parents talking on my show just to have you have an idea of what it's like being a gay parent. So thank you so much for listening. If you have any question or respond, or you can go to onlinepodcast.com and put your comment on the comment area, or you can just call me at 206-888-JOHN, or go to my website onlinepodcast.com and click on the MyChingo thing and leave me a message, or send me an email at online@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and come back for more this Thursday. Thank you for listening and subscribing. Love you all. Bye bye. Don't forget to smile. Ah! Ta-da!